You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing business issues. Some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of the most successful business in the world. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Vincenzo Guzzo, Canadian entrepreneur, CEO of Cinema Guzzo. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yes.
So welcome to the 50s. It's a good decade.
Yep.
I hope you enjoyed indeed. Thank you for joining us. So how did Cinema Guzzo start? Take us back to the beginning.
So in 1974, my father was in Canada working as a machinist, as an Italian immigrant at Pratt & Whitney. And it was the years of union unrest or upheaval, I guess. Mm. And so he had, you know, determined that he needed stability, but he didn't want to continue running what he ran part-time, which was an Italian sports bar. You know, go get a coffee, play some cards because of the long hours. So he decided he was going to buy a cafeteria in one of the big industrial buildings, yeah, and make a living as a cafeteria operator. But then he realized that they cost more than this theater he saw for sale.
Okay.
And he bought a theater. I mean, how easy, you know, how hard can it be to run a theater, right? That's the argument he went with. And so started the 1974 history of, actually, we bought the first theater in 1974, April 1st. And I always tell people it's April 1st. It's a joke, right? No, it's not an April Fool's joke. It was closed on that day.
So how old were you in 74?
I was actually 4. I was going to be 5.
Okay.
Because I'm born 69. A few months later, I was going to be 5.
So was it something you grew up hearing from the very beginning?
So I'm an only child. My mom lost full term 4 children. And then she had, miscarriages or 3, 4, 5 month loss. You know, so it was a very particular thing. So my mom went through, call it anxiety, pregnancy stage, and then postpartum, probably some depression, et cetera, et cetera. So for about 12 years of my life, my mom was part-time because she was, dealing with the issues of losing so many children and so forth. My father instead took it upon himself to bury his sorrow in work. And therefore, I was either left to hang around the house and, create mayhem and trouble, or I would follow my dad. So from a very young age, I would be part of business meetings my father had with bankers and lawyers. And so I knew when, for example, now I forget the year, but I knew when I was young, when interest rates hit 16% and 21%, because my dad would be arguing with bankers about, it's how unreasonable it was, et cetera, et cetera. So I was thrown into this, the French call it marmite, very young, because of the fact that I was an only child.
As a kid, did you think you wanted to run the cinema when you grew up? Was that a dream of you as a kid, or did it come later in life?
So I would tell you, until a certain age, I would say till about 15, 16, the goal was I was going to follow in the family footsteps.
Yeah.
You have to also remember my dad, in the middle of owning movie theaters, also owned the nightclub next to one of our movie theaters. So I grew up, having access to the nightclub world or whatever. So for me, whatever my father did as work was exciting. It was fun or whatever. And then somewhere along the way, I believe is when I went to CEGEP, where I decided I wanted to go to law school, because my father would always say, we can't trust lawyers. We need to have our own lawyer. Like, in other words, a family lawyer that we can trust, because the corporations we're fighting against are so big, they can actually give twice as much business to that law firm and they wouldn't be defending us properly, type of thing. So I wanted to go to law school. First I went to Western in economics. Then I went to law school. When I did go to law school, I found a certain passion for the litigation part of law school and the debating part of law school. So I actually, and I like to say this all the time in interviews, I actually had become Harvey Specter from the show Suits before Harvey Specter even existed. So my goal was I wanted to go be a litigator in New York City Because I had my own commitment issues with my various girlfriends, I felt perfectly in. So when I saw the show Suits for the first time, I said, hey, that's me. What the hell? Type of thing, right? But before, a year before having committed to go to New York, my dad sat me down. He said, look, you do realize you're an only child. You know, we have now 3 theaters. If you're moving to New York, I mean, you were in London, Ontario for 2.5 years and your mom cried every day. It was unbearable. So we might as well sell everything and immigrate with you to the U.S. kind of thing, right? So I said, well, wait up a minute. You know, maybe let me have a look at this. I still have a year before I got to actually make that decision. So I started working more full time as an employee of head office instead of just a theater manager or whatever. And that's when I realized that I was probably litigating more than I would ever litigate my first 5 years in a law firm with US studios about getting pictures, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I ended up saying, you know what, I might as well do this. I'm getting more practice than anywhere else. And then automatically what happened is I started liking it. I mean, it just, you know, I enjoyed the business. And it's a business where you're allowed to be a little loud, you're allowed to be a little awkward, you're allowed to be a little quirky, and you can be eccentric. So it fit perfectly well with my personality. And that's how then I, you know, went in and slowly took things over from my dad.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and we're hearing today from Vince Guzzo, entrepreneur, CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from the CBC's Dragon Den. So are you still a member of the bar and all that?
No, so I never finished my bar because that was the year that I was taking off. I go, let me take this year off and then I can go do my bar. And I ordered the books from the New York bar because I had to do that bar as well. And so, you know, I took that time to read, analyze, and work. And I realized that, you know what? I don't really want to be a lawyer. I want to litigate, but I want to litigate for myself. I'd rather argue for my cases and not for other people's cases.
So how long have you been married now?
So it's my second marriage. My first, I got married in 96 and I got remarried in 2007. So it's...
So you've 14. Sorted out your commitment issues.
But you know, it was a very simple commitment issue. It just, I knew that whatever girlfriend I was dating, I wasn't going to marry. And then I felt bad. So I said, you know, why do I want to waste 2 years of her life? So how do I like not make this relationship last? And then I was realizing that I was sabotaging my own relationships.
So you grew up in Canada.
Yeah.
How Italian do you feel?
So I'll tell you, I feel a lot more Italian because I'm a Canadian that grew up in Quebec than if I was a Canadian who had grown up in London, Ontario, or for example, Toronto. And the only reason I bring up London, Ontario is because I studied there.
Yeah.
And I met the Italian community there, and I thought they were very Italian. I said, okay, so they're like us. But what really happens, I guess, is because there is a certain acceptance from the English community of Italian immigrants, their kids just went to English school and eventually lost the ability to speak Italian. In Quebec, because we had been pushed aside to the English Catholic school board instead of the French Catholic School Board, for some reason, that amalgamation wasn't done. And then many, many years later, they tried to correct it by flipping it and obligating everybody to go to French school. But ultimately, I think the other thing is that because Quebec, you know, French Canadians claimed to be a minority and had the right to exist, I think it was a little awkward for them to try and say, well, then all you other minorities must disappear, right? So I think there was more latitude. But now, still today, if somebody asks me, if I'm in the U.S. and somebody says to me, what are you? I'm going to say I'm Canadian. But if I'm in Canada and somebody asks me, what are you? My natural reaction will be to answer, I'm Italian. Just because in Quebec, the question of what are you isn't, are you born here or not? It's, what are your origins, right?
Okay.
So everybody knows I'm born in Quebec. But French Canadians will say, your accent, you know, that little accent you have when you speak French, where are you? And I says, oh, that's my, you know, that's my time.
But when you speak English, now this may be my imagination, but I hear a bit of a, I guess, an Italian accent, little bit.
Yeah, very little. Versus the when I speak French, it stands out more.
So do you love watching movies? Like from when you were a kid, like do you just love being in a movie house, watching movies for hours?
So this is the awkward thing. So when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, when my dad first bought the first theater, every weekend, my mom would be the ticket salesperson. There was a girl selling popcorn, and my dad would be the projectionist. And I was the bored 4 or 5-year-old that would go watch movies. What's funny is, you know, the French media sometimes tries to portray me as a sold out to American culture or whatever. The truth of the matter is I grew up with Louis de Funès, Alain Delon, all of the Les Charlots, Les Bronzés, anything that's French from Europe movies were the movies we were allowed to play, because all of the big American blockbusters were limited to United Theaters and Odeon back then, right? There was that sort of duopoly that existed there. So for me, I grew up watching what I would call more European upscale movies, whether they were comedies, action movies, that's what it was, right? So I was always impressed when Alain Delon managed to transcend from European French movies to a Hollywood movie, which was, I think, Jumbo 747 or something, where there was a whole thing. And so that was a US production. So I would watch not only movies, but I would watch them over and over again, because with a 3-auditorium complex in 3 days, you know, in a weekend of 2.5 days, for example, I had to watch them over. So sometimes I would actually... I always like to say some of my best friends were the imaginary ones that came out of watching those movies. So, yes, I've grown up and I like watching movies way more than a TV series, for example. I'm not as big on TV.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinema Guzzo and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. Next up, we'll talk about Vince's perspective on the movie theater industry. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series. We're speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. Netflix. Have you been watching? I mean, during the pandemic, not even you could go watch a movie.
Right.
You
know. Well, no, that's not true. I did watch a few movies because I got the DCPs and I went and watched.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. So Netflix, how's that different than watching a movie in one of your great theaters?
So I would tell you, first and foremost, the biggest difference is that Netflix has allowed for what I would call a conventional TV producer to make movies. The real problem, and I know this by experience, when I had asked Fabienne Larouche, who is an amazing TV producer here in Quebec, to make a movie, I then realized when she made the movie that storytelling TV-wise and storytelling movie-wise is two different ways of telling a story. So in other words, you know, with, for example, let's take a Netflix success story like Breaking Bad, you had 8 seasons to tell your story. So, you know, do a calculation, you know, I don't know how many, let's say 15 episodes per season, you know, 15 hours per season. In a movie, you got 2 hours. You got to tell me from A to Z in 2 hours.
Okay.
And you know, so it's a different way of, it's basically a quick fix. It's like, you know, I always like to call it, it's like that adrenaline rush that you want. So you go to the movies for the adrenaline rush. If you just want to say, let me give it a shot, it's not a movie experience. What you want then is to be able to flick the channel back and forth. And what would happen with the Netflix during the pandemic is I would always tell my wife, while I'm at the office, can you choose what you want to watch tonight? And then every time I got home, she goes, no, I didn't have the time. So, and then we'd spend an hour and a half going through the catalog. We'd start a movie. No, this is no good. And so you realize that an hour and a half later, okay, I only have an hour before I can go to bed because I got to work the next, you know, so there's a lot of time wasted looking for what you think you want to watch on TV versus when you go to the movies, it's a very conscious choice you've made to go watch that movie because it's attracted you for some reason. The other difference is if you watch a comedy by yourself, it's funny, right? So we see it in planes, right? You're watching, you're the only one watching. It's funny, but it's not as funny as when there's 200 other people laughing with you. The trigger isn't the same. I watched, and the best example I can give you, I watched Love Story with my wife at home. She had never seen the movie. So we watched Love Story, and she says, yeah, it's a sad story, you know. She says, you know what? Let's do something. Let's go watch it at the theater. So we invited a few of her friends, and we watched the movie together. She goes, why am I even more depressed now than I was at home? She said, because now you have five other women crying or feeling bad, and everybody, you feel the tension of sadness in the room. Same thing with a horror picture, right? You're just sitting there, all of a sudden a cat jumps out of nowhere. You may not even react, but because somebody else reacted to it, she screams, everybody's screaming in the hall, everybody jumps, right? Those are the experiences that you don't get at home. And then we've seen it, right? So I'm on Dragon's Den, and everybody on that, all five of us Dragons all have a home theater. Actually, they all do, I don't. I actually have a full-fledged movie theater less than a kilometer away from my house. So I don't need the home theater. But the movie theater that they have in their theaters gets killed immediately after 2-3 months. Once the novelty of it is done, it's over. They just can't, you know. And so we were saying with Manjeet and Manjeet's brother, I got this huge space. Now I only use it for sport events.
Yeah.
Which, where would he watch those anyway? At home. But now he's watching it on a larger screen. Now he's watching it in a different context. Now it's become a man cave for sport events. That's what happens to the home in theater, in-home theater experience, ultimately. Because the truth of the matter is you want to socialize, right? So one of my best clients, I like to call him, is Andre Demeret from Power Court. He will call me once in a while, and he always tells me this when he does. He says, can you get me some tickets for this movie? And by the way, I want to pay. I'm not calling you to get a freebie. And I laugh, and I go, yeah, no problem, whatever. And it's usually the big picture of the week, right, that he wants to see. And so, you know, sometimes you sit there and you say to yourself, but, I mean, he's literally, you know, his father literally built a miniature Chateau de Versailles. Why can't he build himself a theater? But the truth of the matter is, then he's missing the human connection, that socializing without having to shake hands and saying hi to people.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Vince Guzzo, entrepreneur and CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from the CBC's Dragon Den. So you're optimistic about the future of the business.
Well, I'll tell you like this. The movie theater business is about 120 years old, roughly. I think we should have been bankrupt or disappeared 10 times already, right? Every 10 years, every new invention, movie theaters are supposed to be annihilated. And I'm telling you, the day that's going to happen is the day that you will get married by sitting down in a bed and close your eyes, and now you're living in an imaginary world. The day that becomes our reality, that's the day movie theaters will disappear.
So what draws people to a big movie? Is it the star? Is it because it's a sequel? Is it because of the director? In your long experience, what are the things that make people show up? Is it the review in the newspaper or in the media? What is it?
So I would tell you, in the 47 years I've been in the business, I've seen the trend change. So in other words, my father's generation, they would go because of the actors. They would go because those people inspired them, a good story, a good, you know, a good performance or whatever. But it was also the time when celebrities lived extraordinary lives of controversy, right? Studio 54, you know, it's like they were the first ones to get divorced. Liz Taylor got married 7 times, right? Yeah. So it was things that you could not do. And so you went to the theater to see that idol of yours perform, but you really wanted to live their life. In today's world, I think celebrities have lost a lot of their luster because they're human and you can no longer do the things that were considered, wow, controversial. Now they're considered inappropriate. So celebrities have gone a bit on the wayside. But what has happened is the excess content that people are exposed to makes them less imaginative, less playful, you know, with themselves, right? This imaginary friendship. And so when I see why my kids go watch movies, for example, and I have a 23-year-old all the way down to a 10-year-old, they will tell you it's because of the story. I want to You know, so if you look at a movie like Avengers, it's about everybody losing themselves and becoming that hero, you know, whichever one it is, right? I remember speaking to James Cameron once and I said, so tell me, what's the secret to having had, before Avengers opened, obviously, the two top movies, Titanic and Avatar? He says, like, what's the recipe? And he looked at me and he said, you do realize it's the same movie, right? I said, excuse me? It's the same movie. I don't get it. He goes, well, it's a love story. Titanic's a love story. The background is the Titanic, right? So when the Titanic came out, before it came out, as movie theaters, we were allowed to screen the pictures. And so my father says, that movie I want to go watch. He says, why do you want to go watch that movie? Like, you haven't watched a movie in 10 years, let's say, you know, pre the coming out to the public. He goes, because I'm trying to figure out what James Cameron did to make a movie where we already know what the ending is interesting, yeah. Right? And that's when we realized that it had nothing to do really with the Titanic. It had to do with class distinction, yeah. The poor, the rich, the forbidden love, the Romeo and Juliet remastered, right?
Okay.
Well, what's Avatar? It's exactly the same thing. It's the forbidden world, two different worlds. They're not supposed to fall in love. And once again, he's redefined another way of saying, the Romeo and Juliet story, right? Because that's what's changed. That's what's made making movies today more complicated, is that we can remake all of the movies we used to make. We just have to tell the story differently. I can talk to my 23-year-old a certain way. I had to talk to my 10-year-old daughter a totally different way for her to grasp the same word. And that is the hardest thing Hollywood has to do every 10, 15 years when the generation shift occurs. Whoops, what do we do now to attract people back with our story?
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinnamon Guzzo and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. Next up, we'll talk about what it means to be an entrepreneur. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. So my MBAs, many go into corporate, and I worked for IBM, Oxford, and McGill, so I work in huge organizations. You're an entrepreneur. What is the heart and mind of an entrepreneur versus the corporate type?
So I would tell you, at the core, an entrepreneur is an operator, is a hands-on kind of person. That some of them have become, over the years, venture capitalists, that's fine. But at the end of the day, and that's the big difference we have on the Den, right, is that you have, I would call, a split two and a half, meaning Manjeet and I are true entrepreneur operators. So we still operate and go into our business on a daily basis. I still go to my theaters. I'm still on this construction site, making sure things get done the way the plans say they got to get done and so forth. Then you have Arlene and Wes Hall, who have become pure venture capitalists, right? So they don't go into the office. They can work remotely, like many of us have done for the last 14 months, and they can continue that for the next 20 years. They wouldn't have a problem with it. And then you have Michelle that is on the cusp of both. The corporate guys are what my dad would call 9 to 5, even though they don't work 9 to 5. Let's get that clear, right? Some of those guys don't work 9 to 5, and most of them don't. But the truth of the matter is they are less risk takers than an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is the stuntman in the movie. He's the Evel Knievel of the entertainment business. That's who the entrepreneur is. He's risking his livelihood, his money, either for the adrenaline, either for the reward, et cetera, et cetera. You know, my wife was skydiving. First experience she had skydiving while I was in Toronto filming Dragon's Den. And she said to me, when you come back, we have to do it together. And I said, it's not going to happen. She says, but I don't understand. It's so cool, the adrenaline. I don't need that adrenaline. Every day that I go to work, every pitch I get, every new opportunity that comes by my desk is an adrenaline for me. How can I make this work? How can I get this person to agree to do this deal this way? You know, so it's almost like it's not the actual shooting of the hunted in a hunting trip that is important, but it's the whole process, right? So I like to tell people, if you think you're going to get satisfaction when you get to the finish line, that finish line moves. And that's what an entrepreneur is, ultimately. Most entrepreneurs I know don't have an exit plan. They don't have a retirement plan. That is the difference. I think a lot of the corporate guys have a plan. They're going to, you know, go up the corporate ladder. They know they're going to get stock options. They know they're going to get bonuses, et cetera, et cetera. And they reinvest that, for the goal is by 55, 60, they are independently wealthy. Yeah, they could work or not work. Most entrepreneurs, you know, look at the people, you know, like Buffett and all of those guys. Those are entrepreneurs in their own right.
Yeah.
But they have a hard time staying still.
Yeah.
That's a true entrepreneur. It's almost somebody who's got the jitters and he's always got to find something to do.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Vince Guzzo, entrepreneur and CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from the CBC's Dragon Den. The pandemic, it stops the business, reopen, goes back. Were you going, are we going to go bankrupt, or were you in good enough shape that you could survive that and now you're coming out of it?
So, I mean, the anxiety and the concern isn't necessarily the word bankruptcy, but it's more, will I lose part of the autonomy or the freedom to do what I want?
Okay.
Because some financial partner may feel, no, we need to step in and whatever. That was one of the, but that's always a concern when you're an entrepreneur, right? You never want to lose that independence. We made a gamble, which was, I would say, the wrong gamble on a cash flow basis, which was we asked for no capital or interest reprieves. We just said, okay, we'll continue paying you. This thing can't last more than 3 to 5 months. We're good. Problem is, it didn't last that long. It lasted much longer. And therefore, it put us in a cash flow tight position. So it didn't stop us from investing in R&D. And today, I would tell you 2021 will be a fairly tight, you know, we're running the ship very tight. But 2022, once all of the food retail stuff will be launched in September, I think 2022 will be a record year. And that's when then we'll just wipe out a whole bunch of, you know, debt and repayment of, call them, you know, any government grants, subsidies that weren't really grants or subsidies.
So do you have partners or are you the sole owner?
So my dad, my mother, and myself are the owner.
You're listening to the CEO Series, and we're hearing today from Vince Guzzo, entrepreneur, CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from the CBC's Dragon Den. Dragon's Den, how did that come about? Did they call you up? Like, how does that work anyway?
So, I'm in the movie business, and because I'm in the movie business, I'm known by the guys in LA as a character, because they always like to say, you gotta remember, right, in 1998, I sued Cineplex and Famous Players for restriction of trade practices, creating barriers to entry. Most people who've always tried to sue usually would sue the studios saying, refusal to deal. You're refusing to give me pictures. I didn't. I turned around and said, what up? You guys are my partners.
Yeah.
And you guys are basically being so now that you're willfully hijacked or being hijacked simply, it doesn't make a difference. The truth of the matter is there's a hijacking process. So I sued Famous Players and Cineplex. That was a bold move. Then the other bold move was that I insisted with the Competition Bureau that the subpoenas be sent out on the Friday before Christmas holidays. So all of the studio guys were really upset at me. And I said, guys, I told you. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to win the fight, but you're going to get a few punches along the way and it's going to hurt. And so ultimately, we all came out of it. The deal was done. We can play the movies. So we're a better company because of that fight. Mm. But they're happier as well because they're making way more money now because there's a lot more people having access to movies in a quicker time where we're paying more film rental early and back. So ultimately what had happened is I would get teased by the LA guys all the time saying, we should do a show with you. We should do a TV show with you. We should make a movie about you type of thing, right? And Sony owns Dragon's Den. So the people at Sony wanted to replace, even though they had sold the rights to CBC, they wanted to replace the loss of having lost Kevin O'Leary, who had gone to Shark Tank, which is still owned by Sony, by the way, but it's just, and so they were looking for somebody here. So every year or every 2 years, you'd have somebody new on the male side. And then somebody said, why don't we ask Guzzo? He might be able to do it, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, no. And I said, I'm not, you know, you got to remember, for me, reality TV was the Kardashians. And I said, there's no way I'm putting my family through that or whatever. And so then they proposed to me the French Dragons then.
Yeah.
Because I said, guys, I'm not convinced the rest of Canada finds my humor funny versus French Canadians. I know them exactly what's going to laugh, what's not, and so forth. But the producers of the French Canadian version didn't want me. And then was repitched to me the English. And I said, okay, I'll do the English. And thank God, you know, they said no to me.
Do they get your humor?
Not only do they get my humor, it actually opened up a whole window of opportunity and of awareness of who I am across the rest of Canada.
When are you've been in Quebec.
Yeah.
When are you going to conquer the rest of Canada?
Well, you know, there's a few changes that are coming in the Canadian movie industry. And I think that's going to allow us to cherry pick the cities we want to go to. Because remember, right now, the movie industry is still made. It's still about the more theaters you have, the stronger you are. We concentrate in Montreal, Greater Montreal, makes us a powerhouse here. Studios will listen to us. If I had scattered my theaters over 10 provinces, 10 movie theaters, I would be a nobody.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinema Guzzo and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. Next up, we'll talk about Vince's perspective on work-life integration. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Vince Guzzo, CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from CBC's Dragon Den. How do you recharge after a long day?
I would tell you I probably go home, have a quick bite with the kids, go see my three hens in the backyard and make sure they're doing okay. I got three hens in the back. My wife didn't want me to get a dog again. And so I bought three hens. I take care of three hens. They give me three eggs a day, and I'm a happy man because I get my three eggs. And then I lie down on the couch and, you know, go on social media and try and see what the world has been doing while I was busy working, and try and, you know, make my comments and try and positively impact the debate, if anything. You know, I think if anybody reads my comments on social media, they'll realize that as much as they can be harsh or critical, they're always very polite. You know, I don't, you know, like, even though my differences with Premier Legault, I never called him a crook or I never said anything that. I called him incompetent in the way it managed stuff, but that I don't consider that to be an insult. It's not gratuitous, at least. And you know, and I try and reflect on what the day was and how it was and what I need to do tomorrow and what I need to do in the next week and what I need to do in the next 30 days to try and get things done to advance. I look at my emails. You know, unfortunately, I got way too much junk mail these days. And so I try and clean that up and, you know, try and make sure that my wife doesn't feel abandoned considering the time I spend doing other things than instead of being with her.
How do you keep in shape? Do you go to the gym, you work out? What do you do?
I don't do very much. Believe it or not, I'm not necessarily a health nut. I do bicycle a bit. You know, I have a speed bike that I use every once in a while. But I'm not, you know, like, I'm not going to wear the whole leotard suits and do a 3 hour bike. You know, I'll just maybe do a half hour just to go around the neighborhood and whatever.
But you don't look overweight. Like, you look in pretty good shape.
No, but I actually don't. I actually, without even realizing it, I do that fasting diet, I think it is, right? I eat breakfast, and then I don't eat till dinner at night. And if I have lunch, I will not have breakfast. So I know I'm going to have lunch. I want to have breakfast, everything. And I don't eat a lot anymore. I used to eat my, call it emotions, or I would eat my anxieties. I don't eat.
What's your passion? When did you realize it, and has it evolved? Putting the family to the side. So you're kind of your business passion.
So it's going to sound shallow and it's going to sound simplistic, but the right to do whatever I want has always been my quest. And if that meant making a lot of money, well, that's what it was. And I always like to say that sometimes when you have an individual who seems to be so self-centered that he's only thinking of himself, that's when you realize that those people eventually have a positive impact on society, whether it's giving $1 million to the Jewish General for a new scanner and now twice as many people can get scanned or whatever it is, right? But ultimately, my quest is freedom, is the right to do what I want and the privilege to do what I want, right? So a lot of people don't realize there's a big difference between my rights and my privileges. You know, so when I went to the U.S. one day, you know, I had a border crossing guy who asked me questions and I said, I don't know, what's with this harassment? He goes, listen to me, buddy. You're Canadian, right? And he says, yeah. He goes, okay, coming to the U.S. is not a right. It's a privilege. So you either answer my questions the way I like them or you can turn around and go back. And that's when I realized, okay, what do I need to do to never get talked to like that again? What do I, and so regretfully, because we grew up in Quebec here, it seems to be that money is the root of all evil. But the truth of the matter is, tomorrow, if we're going to want to resolve this health crisis in our hospitals and so forth, what are we going to need? Money. And so at the end of the day, it's always money we need, right? So I've said, you know what? Let me try and make as much money as I can while doing it honestly, obviously not, you know, I could have been a crook, you know, I guess everybody has that choice. And I chose not to be a crook and I chose to do it in an honest way.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Vince Guzzo, entrepreneur and CEO of Cinema Guzzo, and Mr. Sunshine from the CBC's Dragon Den. You've made a lot of money over the years, so you guess it right more often than you guess it wrong.
Yeah.
How do you keep in touch with the trends so that you get a business that's going to do well? How do you keep cool and with it?
So, you know, one of the things I've noticed over the years is that following the trends usually means you're either wrong or a step behind. Trying to create the trend is the best, you know, so the best way to predict the future is to create it. So, you know, so the biggest debates I would have on Dragon's Den with one of my past colleague, which was Lane Merrifield, was, you know, during this pandemic, he was convinced people were never going to wear suits again. People were just going to go back, you know, just wear gym clothes and stay at home and so forth and so forth. And I tried to explain it to him, but was unsuccessful in explaining to him. They said, you don't understand why people wear suits. People don't wear suits because they think it's a uniform and they want to wear suits because people feel good in that suit. Most people who dress well and dress up because that's how they feel empowered by that. And so trying to always go back and remembering human nature is the best way of saying, okay, does this really make sense, right? So I say this a few times on Dragon's Den when I say it, it's great, you know, so this is gonna save how many more, you know, how many more people can I fire with this new technology? And then, you know, say, oh, it's great. It'll drop your labor force by 40%. Great. But then my taxes will go up because I gotta pay for those people to live anyway because they can't live. And so it's not a great idea. If the ideas are less people being employed, I usually don't like that idea, right? I'm a big believer that Canada should bring back its manufacturing. We should have a minimal amount of our own stuff to guarantee us that we're never gonna be hijacked by India, China, and Turkey, and all of the producing nations. And so ultimately, have I made mistakes? Yeah, but what's made me get up every day and accept those mistakes is I said, well, is going to university a good thing or was a mistake? In other words, I may have wasted 3 years of my life and I had to pay them, right? Instead of I could have worked and made money. But so look at it as every mistake for me is seen as an educational process. I paid to learn a lesson. I paid dearly sometimes and less dearly other times. But the guess, like I said, when it comes to the movie theater business at least is you know, we're not like a cat because we've surpassed the 9 lives. We're at like 12 lives that we should have been dead, right? And but we've reinvented the business. We reinvent the experience. What we can't reinvent is human nature. Humanity needs to socialize. And a lot of people don't realize that movie theaters are the best social distancing, because that's what you would be doing anyway. You go into a 400-seat auditorium, 100 people, you're sitting away from each other because you don't want to sit next to somebody you don't know. You don't say hi to him. You don't shake his hand. You don't have to hug him. You don't have to do nothing. But now you watch the movie with 100 people.
Yeah. Are you an introvert or extrovert?
I consider myself to be an extrovert protecting the introvert in me. So in other words, a lot of people don't realize that I'm a actually very sensitive person, but I've done a good job being seen as the tough guy, the guy that a lot of people don't even try to hurt me because they're scared of the reaction. So it's protected myself.
So it's kind of the role you have, you play a part.
That's right, but now I've been paying it for so long.
It's you.
It's me, right? But there's another me in me that's been protected by it.
This is the CEO Series. Vincenzo, thank you for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. Alla prochaine.